This is Amerinds.
We talked about a lot of subjects. We talked about the importance for the United States and New Zealand to work cooperatively and helping democracy in places like Afghanistan. We talked about North Korea and Iran, our mutual desire for these problems of nations wanting to have nuclear weapons to be solved in a peaceful way by using the diplomatic process.
Hi, everyone. My name's Arthur, and I'm a gay American now living in New Zealand. Welcome to my podcast. This is episode one of the Amerinds podcast, so I thought I'd start out by telling you a little bit about where I hope to go with this thing. Essentially, I see it as an extension of my blog, which is at amerinds.blogspot.com. Except that on my blog, I talk more about things in the news or pop culture or compare and contrast the two countries, those sorts of things. With the podcast, I hope to talk a little bit more about what I experience and what it feels like living in another country, and what it sometimes feels like to be basically between two countries. Because New Zealand and the U.S. are very much alike, but they're very different as well. And so sometimes it feels a little bit like being trapped between two countries. Over time, I hope to bring some other people into the conversation to give some additional perspectives and maybe some a better idea of what it's like living in New Zealand. And, of course, at any time, you're welcome to join the conversation. You can leave a comment on my blog, or you can send an email to me at amerinds@yahoo.com. The clip that I opened this episode with is of George Bush right after his meeting with New Zealand Prime Minister Helen Clark. And I think in some ways it sort of illustrates the kinds of things I'm talking about, because I can remember growing up in America and all the years that I lived there, seeing various presidents meeting with various heads of other countries. And I don't think I ever thought much about it. Sometimes I was vaguely interested in what the president of the day was saying, but frankly, more often than not, I wasn't. But now, living in another country, I have a slightly different perspective, because I sit here and I see the head of government of this country visiting the president of the U.S., and I am interested in what's said and in some ways what's not said, because it does very much affect what happens to this country. And it occurred to me that maybe I'm only experiencing what people in other countries were experiencing when they would see their leader meeting with the U.S. president of the day, the same president that I personally was ignoring, of course. I don't know. I mean, I could be completely wrong. Maybe they don't take any notice either. This particular visit is a bit different. Relations between the U.S. and New Zealand have been a bit cool for quite a while. It started when New Zealand went nuclear free, which was back during the Reagan administration, and they didn't take to it too well, to say the least. They responded by suspending their defense obligations under the ANZUS alliance. ANZUS was the alliance between Australia, New Zealand, and the U.S. And among other things, it required that an attack on one was to be considered an attack on all. It was a mutual defense pact, essentially. When the U.S. suspended its defense obligations, it, among other things, decreed that New Zealand military forces could no longer train with American military forces. Now, this wasn't exactly a very bright thing for America to do, I don't think, because it meant that it really potentially severely affected the readiness of New Zealand armed forces to integrate with American armed forces in the event of a war in the Asia-Pacific region. So what ended up happening in those years is that Australia would train with the U.S. and New Zealand would train with Australia. And the hope was that somehow there would be enough similarity there that if there was a war that New Zealand could integrate successfully. All of that changed, as so many other things did, on September 11th, 2001. And after that, there was an international effort formed to engage in high seas interdiction. Basically, they seized ships looking for terrorists or weapons of mass destruction, those sorts of things. because New Zealand participated in that, the U.S. allowed New Zealand to engage in military exercises with them as part of this program. New Zealand also sent combat troops to Afghanistan, and they, along with Australia, are quite active in peacekeeping efforts here in the South Pacific. Now, all of that is really important to the U.S. because, well, first of all, they need all the friends they can get for this sort of thing, and an unstable South Pacific is potentially a breeding ground for terrorists. So it's in everybody's interests to have a stable, peaceful South Pacific. And as I say, New Zealand, along with Australia, has played a major role in trying to make that happen. So New Zealand's importance to America has been rising in recent years. The last time that Helen Clark was in Washington, she met with Bush, but also with then Secretary of State Colin Powell, who said that New Zealand was a very, 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 very good friend of the U.S., but not an ally. Now, that's not entirely a bad thing. When you're an ally, you're obligated to basically follow the lead of your other ally. In our case, in the case of New Zealand, it's possible for the country to sort of stand back. And New Zealand is a big believer in diplomacy, in the rule of law, especially international law, and international organizations like the UN. That's why New Zealand participated in Afghanistan, which had the sanction of the United Nations, but didn't send any combat troops to Iraq, because it didn't. And that's still basically the government's policy. It prefers to work in a multilateral way with many countries to try to bring about various goals through diplomatic means, or failing that, military means, as long as it's sanctioned by the United Nations. So, as it happens, as I say, the relations between the U.S. and New Zealand have warmed up considerably over the past few years, so that when the Prime Minister went to Washington, she was actually treated pretty well. In addition to her half-hour meeting, Bush also had her around for lunch. Can't imagine what they had, but and that's probably the longest time that a New Zealand Prime Minister has spent with the U.S. President in Washington in a very, very long time. The main topics, well, the Bush's clip talked about some of the main topics, but New Zealand also was quite keen to promote a free trade agreement. Now, that's not going to happen anytime soon because the Fast Track Authority is set to expire, and also, for that matter, so is the Bush administration. So it's highly unlikely that there will be any move on any sort of free trade agreement, and whether it's even desirable or not is a whole nother topic. But the thing is, the thing for me is how unusual it is, almost surreal, to be looking at the leader of the country I live in meeting with the country that I'm from. It's a strange feeling. It's kind of like this isn't directly analogous, but it's a bit like when I lived in Chicago, the crosstown series when the White Sox and the Cubs would play each other. Now, being a Northsider, I always backed the Cubs, but there was a little piece of me that was like, well, they're both Chicago teams. Of course, you can't really do that in Chicago. It's got to be one or the other. But I don't think that that's so true in the modern world. People often talk about their country as if it's some sort of thing that has been created by some god and just given to the peoples of the world to love and cherish. And it's not like that at all. I mean, when you're born in a country, you don't have any say in the matter. You know, you're born there and that's that. If you choose a country to live in, that's a bit different because then you're making a commitment to it. But the place that you're born is always the place where you ought to belong without question. Now, in my homeland, there are a lot of barriers, I'll say, that make it hard to live there. My partner is a Kiwi, and for us to be together, there really was no option but for me to move to New Zealand. American law, then as now, doesn't have any way for an American citizen to bring in their non-American same-sex partner, whereas New Zealand, like a lot of other countries, does. And so for us to be together, I had to move here. It was as simple as that. Now, fortunately for me, that turned out to be okay. I mean, I settled in and got to know the place. And also fortunately for me, there were quite a few things that were similar. There were some of the, fast food restaurants. Some American shows would end up on television, American movies, of course, in the cinemas. And yet there were still significant differences. Drive on the left side of the road here, like in Britain and Japan and some other countries. Australia, of course. And there were other slight cultural differences. Sometimes it was names for things, or it might be slang. But slang always varies from place to place. It does even in the U.S. And initially I had some trouble with the accent, I have to be honest. It's something I got used to over time. But now, even after, 11 and a half years living in New Zealand, there are still times when somebody will say something and I won't have the slightest idea what they're saying. Not necessarily everything they're saying, but it might be a particular word or a particular phrase, that sort of thing. And I suppose that would be true if somebody ran into me, if, say, a New Zealander had run into me in America, even after years, I would still be saying things that they wouldn't know what they meant. It's just the way we are. I mean, we absorb so much throughout our lives without even being aware of it that, you know, it becomes second nature, I guess, is what I'm saying. And it's not the sort of thing that you can be taught. You just have to experience it over time and absorb it. But there have been times over these past 11 and a half years when I would have given anything to not have to think about the differences, to not have to translate things in my head or to have to explain anything or to have things explained to me. That sort of feeling got easier and became lesser as time passed. I mean, nowadays, I don't really think too much about it. I'm just so used to things now. I'm quite used to driving on the left side of the road, and I'm used to dealing with shopkeepers and all those sorts of things. So that's sort of stuff I don't even notice anymore. But it's that kind of thing that a lot of people never think about when they contemplate moving to another country. I mean, I've never lived in Canada, so I don't know how similar and how different they really are. I've only been there as a tourist. But I imagine that even living in Canada has significant differences. I read on one blog where they were talking, the blogger was talking about how they use phraseology that's similar to here. For example, they'll say that someone is in hospital instead of in the hospital. Little things like that, that they can really add up to create a sense of disconnection with the place you're living. And it can actually be really quite lonely when you're sitting there and you're thinking that you have to explain every single joke. You have to explain the way you think. You can't necessarily say everything you think because you might not understand the context of what the other people are talking about. In my case, one of the first things I did when I arrived here was to start studying history and pop culture to try to get a more intuitive feeling for what the place was like. I mean, I was basically just doing the same sorts of things that Kiwis would do automatically growing up. But for me, I had to make a conscious effort to try to assimilate all that sort of information so that if someone made a joke, I understood it. If somebody made a cultural reference, I got it. And basically so I could just learn to fit in. It's a process. It's a journey. There is no single point where you suddenly say to yourself, yep, that's it. I'm settled now. I'm part of this place. It's a feeling that develops over time. A connectedness develops easily. You can feel connected to a place without really feeling you're part of it, I think. And for me, it was probably years in the making, but there came a point when I realized that I felt not only connected to New Zealand, but also part of it. I've taken part in election campaigns. I've talked about New Zealand endlessly to people back in America, and in most recently in my blog. There's a lot to share. There's a lot that's good about this place, and there's a lot that's good about living here. And so I guess what I'd like to conclude with today is that from my perspective, there's no such thing as a single home, because I was born in America, and that will always be my home. That's where my ancestors going back several generations are buried. But this is my home now, and I have equally deep and strong connections to this land. I don't think the two are mutually exclusive. I don't think you have to choose one or the other in this modern world. And that's essentially what this podcast is going to be about. As I say, you're welcome to leave a comment on my blog, amarins.blogspot.com, or send me an email at amarins@yahoo.com. And thanks for listening, and be sure to leave a comment, because if everybody hates this podcast, I won't do another. Thanks. Bye.